Hello and welcome. My name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for listening. Today I'm here with Judith Briles, who's the author of 28 books, 18 of which were traditionally published, and her books have been published in 16 countries. She's been a featured guest on more than 1,000 radio and TV shows, including Oprah, Good Morning America, CNN, and MSNBC. She's mentored many up-and-coming authors and publishers for years and is the past president of the Colorado Independent Publishers Association and the Colorado Authors League. She has chaired a number of the CIPA's annual three-day colleges and writes a website called The Book Shepherd, or the Book Shepherd segment for the Book Marketing Com newsletter, and many other columns, along with leading her popular publishing salons. And the reason I thought that the Book Shepherd was your website is also called the Book Shepherd. So sorry for that. I saw the link and I thought, oh, it must be your website. Anyway, welcome, Judith. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Susan. Well, let's just jump into that. And there's so much going on. So as Susan said, that who and what I am really does bring me to the party. And one of the things that I wanted to cover, besides just some of the nuances of what's going on in the publishing world today, is this thing called the author, and I always bring in the book platform, and how do you go about creating that. So there's a lot to that. In the whole realm of this thing, it's a wonderful world, this publishing world. It's also a chaotic world. It's a confusing world. And the truth be told, sometimes there's just too much stuff out there, and there's something that I'm calling book pollution, which is growing rapidly and has really kick-started this past year. So besides the 28 books that I've written, I've sold over 1 million copies. I've been on all the major publicity shows from Oprah to CNN multiple times to featured in Time and People magazine and the Wall Street Journal. And my God, I even survived the National Enquirer. And of the 18 books that I have published, I can tell you it was not, did I have some wonderful relationships with some of the New York publishers of that 18. Yeah, I did. Did I have some real pitfalls and spiraling, you know, throw up moments with some of them? The answer is yes, I did. And that you have to really know what you're doing. And one of my things is a book shepherd. It's very important for me for people to understand the nuances of all the different modes, whether you go to the traditional methodology, which is New York, to you pick up one of the many hybrids, from paying someone to publish you to, God forbid, you get stuck with the vanity press. Please don't do that, because I am very concerned about the level and the increase of publishing predators that are floating mm-hmm. around out here. So one of the things I learned to really sell a lot of my books, so those million copies, they did not go through bookstores. Very few really went through the bookstore channel. I learned how to sell them from the platform, the back of the room, and that type of thing. And we're going to get into this afternoon, or if you're listening in the evening as one of our, or in the morning time as one of the people who listen on the downplay of it, is that you need to understand the crunching of the numbers and to comparing them so you can make some really solid decisions. I will tell you that my best sale was roughly $16,000 worth of books within a five-hour period. And by the way, that was 526 of those babies, one at a time. So that was that one. And then my own latest book, which I would encourage all our listeners to get a hold of, is called Show Me About Book Publishing. And it really is it's not a tome, it's not a 500-page book, it's not even a 300-page book, but it really does set up good timelines and processes and the players that you're going to have to work with, and it does have the model that I put in of doing the comparison between the New York and the others. So let's just jump into that. That when you look at, I always kind of think of the door number one, door number two, door number three, and actually, Susan, the reason why I think of that is I actually won the big deal on Let's Make a Deal.
Did you really?
Did. It was a hoot. It was a
wow.
hoot. And when I went through a divorce years later, he got my big deal. But
oh
well.
Oh, no.
Traditional publishing is, and I will tell you that I never started on the path to be an author, much less a writer, much less a publisher, much less running a publishing author association and running conferences. Never was that in my game career path. I mean, who knew about those things? And I really believed how my first book came about, which was called The Woman's Guide to Financial Savvy, really came about from workshops that I was creating for women back in the 70s when I was a stockbroker with E.F. Hutton. And I thought the only way, the only option was that you went to New York, and I had clueless of how to do that. I was even clueless of how to write a book. So I hired a book coach, and for the ripe old tune, back in 1979, of $7,500, which back then was a ton of money,
wow. Yeah.
To show me the ropes of how to do it. And we created the book and a little mini proposal. You hardly had to do any type of proposal back in those days. And he introduced me to his agent, and it was sold. It was bidded on, and I went with St. Martin's Press, and you know, it's the Waldorf Astoria and Good Morning America and 3 printings in 3 weeks. And my God, Susan, I thought that's the way the world went for authors. Mm-hmm. And I never really planned on creating another book. But here's what happens. You find that books breed books. And then that started that path, never knowing that there was another option out there. So I was a truly bona fide book snob. And I really believe that you published with New York, if you did anything outside of that realm, you were a bad person. You were an illegitimate person type of thing. All right, that has changed dramatically, and I will tell you, there's nothing worse than a recovered book snob. Nothing worse. It's like a recovered smoker. But I have come full circle and have looked at other options, and it was because some of the mishaps that I went through with the traditional publishing route. But I lived and breathed the traditional publishing route. I had 2 publishers go belly up, owing me over $84,000 in royalties. I had 2 of my books orphaned. And this is just a horrible thing for an author to happen, is that the editor, who is your advocate, back in the days when I was publishing with New York, the editors were your advocate. They bought your book, they had the checkbook, they supported it, they cheered for you, and they blocked for you. And that's not the way it is today. And one of my editors was fired, who was with Simon & Schuster, and that's what I learned. I did not know at that time, but I learned that my book would be orphaned. And then the second time the orphanage happened was when I had called my editor, and I had a book that I was in contract with Contemporary Books, which is now, I believe, a Wiley book under their umbrella. But I had called the day before it was supposed to be due and say, "Hey, Linda, I'm going to be late a week. I just want you to know I'm doing some fine-tuning, but everything's looking good." And she says, "Not to worry. It's fine. And, hey, I have some good news and bad news." And I said, "Ooh, so tell me, let's do the bad news and we'll end on the good news." Well, the bad news is tomorrow's my last day. And I went, "Oh, my God," because I knew what that meant.
Yeah.
And I said, "And the good news?" And she said, "Well, I have a great opportunity." Well, and she says, "Don't worry, your book will be assigned to someone and they're going to love it as much as I've loved working with you," and blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what? It was assigned to someone, but they didn't love it. In fact, they wanted to dump it. And that book went on to win. I had to fought for it because my agent at the time said, "You know, they're trying to cancel the contract." And I said, "You know what? I delivered what I said I was going to deliver. And I'll be damned if they're going to cancel it. And I'll be damned if I'm going to give them any money back." And that book went on to win the Colorado Nonfiction Book of the Year. So, but no support. So orphaned twice. I am now learning my lessons that there truly must be another way. Door number 2 is about self-publishing. And door number 2 in self-publishing has this huge breadth now to cherry pick from on where to go. And this is where all the book pollution is coming from. And the good news is that it is so much simpler to publish a book today. The bad news is it is so much simpler to publish a book today. And when you take in the accounting of all the e-books and the p-books and the whatever we want to call the books, from the vanity press to the pay-to-publish, the subsidy press to fill in the blank, that almost 3 million copies came out the door last year. 3 million copies. I vet that probably 2.8 million of them shouldn't have been published. So what do you do, and how do you start separating yourself, and do you want to be under the self-published realm? Because one of the deals that has to be dealt with is the book snobbery who looks down on the self-published realm. There are some wonderful self-published books out there. There are some wonderful books who have gone on to the big main stage who started off with self-published, including one of the Bibles that we all tout that everyone should have, which is The Elements of Style and Strunk and White.
Yeah.
And so you've got the self-published, but this is where the publishing predators are lurking. This is where they are hiding behind doors and windows and curtains and all kinds of things, and they are coming out in droves under the auspices of legitimate publishing houses, and they create their little imprints. And you think, oh, by golly, this is so wonderful that you've got the publishing days in your eyes and you're just so excited. And then all of a sudden you find out you're dealing with somebody else. And it's like maybe someone from Author House or Author Solutions or one of the other Ex Libris or something like that. And you're saying, well, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for them. I didn't want to be with a Vanity Press. I didn't want to be, I was going with this group, but that's what they're doing. And that they've become these, I've spent the last 3 weeks, I have negotiated full return of all monies for several people who have come to me. Getting caught in these vices out there. So it's book pollution, publishing predators. It is truly an author beware environment, and I want our listeners to pay attention to that. Third door, number door, which is my favorite door, which is the small press and the independent press. And that's what a lot of our members also with SPAM are, but that they just, they're, you know, they develop their little houses and they're publishing sometimes multiple copies, and multiple printings and multiple books and maybe multiple genres, and there are all kinds of things. But they really look at publishing as a method to make a living. Mm-hmm. Can your words make a living? And I absolutely believe they do, but they come about by creating that author and book platform, which is what we're going to get into. So there's what brought me to the party. Well, having been orphaned a couple of times, having a couple of publishing, small publishing houses that were subsidiaries going belly up and owing me a lot of money. And then it started with a phone call, actually, out of a client that I was doing a speech for in Seattle, who said that we're really looking forward to you coming and doing a speech, and we would like to see if you could contact your publisher and see if you could arrange at least 1,000 copies of the book, because we'd like to give one to everybody. And I'm going, well, this is an author's dream, but what I knew and what they didn't know is I had just taken back rights to that book, and secondly, only 60 copies existed.
No.
I said, of course I can talk to the publisher. And by then I'm thinking it's me and the plant in the corner.
Yeah.
And I knew that the book that I took back needed to be updated. It was the beginning of having a lot of websites and things in. This was 2000. And I had to tap dance with the area. Well, I was able to negotiate enough money that I ended up, by the time I was done with printing, I was able to find a layout person that turned out to be involved in the layout of one of my books that I had done with Josie Bass out of San Francisco back then, which is now also part of Wiley.
Mm-hmm.
And she was right here in Colorado where I'm based. I was also able to get a hold of a fairly sharp cover designer that could help me and put this all together. And what I didn't know, which is what I really know a lot about now, is the printing area. And I was limited with the printers because I had to get this thing done in a short period of time by the time I'd done my rewrites and the layout, etc. So I was able to negotiate enough money to get 2,000 copies. So basically I gave $1,000 to them. And now I have 1,000 that I seeded my own publishing house. And that's where Mile High Press started and took off from there. And then since then, it's published other works that I've done, but we're also now starting to publish a few other authors that I think are a fit that are, and that I'm involved with in certain ways. So there was a timing thing, timing meaning I needed to do it very quickly. If you sell to New York in the traditional route, you're talking about 18 months, even 2 years to get your book out. If you've got a topic that is timely or can become obsolete, this is just not an option for you to go that route. Money's important, and we're going to get into money during our session today, because money is when you start realizing how much you can make if you figure out how to sell these books versus how much you're going to get in royalties from a traditional route or some of the other hybrid routes, you start paying attention to them. Control is really important to me. I am nutsy when it comes to covers and what they should look like or what colors they should have or how they should pop. And I wasn't so much in the beginning. I mean, all of us authors used to get together and grumble and complain about our covers and that kind of thing. That was kind of the norm. But for me, control of the quality of the book, the paper, the fonts, and all that is really important. And then lastly, it's just the quality. Paper is thinner. Books I had published in the mid-80s, the quality of the paper is superior to what traditional publishing is doing today. So all those things come together, the time, money, control, quality, that led me to say, you know what, this is where I belong. I need to get into this route of it. So with that said, I think it's important to ask our listeners to really answer a few questions. You need to know why, is there a book in you, why should you publish? Why are you publishing? What's it about? Is it for credibility? Is it expertise? Is it to try to make some money? Is it your last gasp? Is it that you have just a remarkable story to tell? Why? You have to really be clear. What's your topic? It's always been nutsy for me when people come to me and say, oh, I want to be just like you. Can you tell me what to write about? Oh, please don't do that. Don't do that. It's your expertise and your topic, and that's part of the platform development that comes there. And then the third component and question is, you really need to know who's your crowd. When authors tell me, and new authors, and I ask them, well, who's your book for? Oh, it's for everybody. No, it's not. Your book is not for everybody. It's not for the masses. And in fact, I've always said the more you niche yourself, the more you funnel it down, the bigger your market becomes. It's so much easier to be the whale in the lake versus the sardine in the sea. It's so much easier to do that, to drill down and become that known go-to person. And I don't care if you're fiction or nonfiction. Nonfiction, it's easier, but heck, fiction has a gazillion categories that's going on. And you can drill down and become the name. And and one of the things that's been fabulous about the internet is they are the fiction writer's best friend. This is the way we launch them, we test them, we build them, we tease people, we play with them, we get them to come in, and we start it with the ebook before we get them to buy that printed book. So who's the crowd? And then you need to really answer the question, how come you're writing this? How come you're creating it? Why are you putting all this time and this energy, et cetera, into it? And then here's the $64,000 question. What are you willing to invest? Now, we're talking money. We're talking time. We're talking energy. We're talking your commitment. You have to address that question right up front, because that's your platform infrastructure. That's where it comes from. What's your vision? What are you willing to invest to get it there? How much time are you willing to commit to take care and nurture that baby? And then you need to decide what's your format. You know, are you E? Are you P? Are you going to be V, which is video? I mean, which way are you going to go? And my advice would be is you're going to love them all. It's we've got A for audio. Which way are you going to go? Because that buying books today is like going to a restaurant. And when you're in an Italian restaurant, whether it's spaghetti or lasagna or chicken piccata or fill in the blank or parmigiana or whatever, you've got choices. And that's what we need to give the reader, the choice. So that's your formatting. And then you need to figure out what players you need on your team. And then I always like to ask, what does success look like? What's it look like? Is it money? Is it fame? Is it being on TV? Is it being on Oprah? We just had a client that we worked through a book that I think is going to be quite successful. And she was contacted by Oprah with a new show on her new network. And my advice to her was to take a pass. And she said, but it's Oprah. I said, but it's not your audience. It's not your crowd. Your book was designed specifically for CEOs. Your book was designed specifically for this. And it's a very narrow deal. But it's Oprah. It's Oprah. And I said, do you realize that network is not doing so hot? Do you realize the demographics are absolutely not your demographics? And so if you do this, Heather, is it your ego talking, which I'm willing to acknowledge and work with, or is there something else? And I think it's very important to understand those things. All right, so that's kind of a putting those the setup as you move into this into a nutshell. And then there are things that authors don't want to hear in the publishing area, and it could be as simple as your manuscript stinks. And I know I've worked with a lot of authors. They're clearly the author. They're just sucky writers. And you just have to deal with it. You have to get help. The average book closes at 18, page 18. You've got to have them hooked. And so I want you all to think of three words that I work with, all my authors that I work with. I want you to be sassy, snappy, and salty. I want you to really be punchy with some of your writing so it comes out. And I really learned to be punchy as a columnist. I was wrote a column for the business journals for 10 years. I really learned to love that one-word sentence. You know, sometimes ouch is all you need. Sometimes shit will do it, you know, depending on what kind of writing you're doing. Sometimes a one-sentence paragraph is just perfect. And if there is one of the bugaboos that I have working with some of the authors is I will immediately go in and start slashing their paragraphs because they go on, they have paragraph perpetuity. Cut them up. You have to help the eyeball in reading. You need to use some sidebars and call-outs, especially in the nonfiction realm. That's not a fiction issue. But you can spice up fiction so it reads and smooths very well on that. So manuscripts could be a problem. Don't rely on your friends or your mom or your sister to be your editor unless that's what they do professionally because, you know, they like you. they may not be critical where you need to be critical. They may be very clueless. You're clueless about the business. You need to understand it. You need to understand that you may thought you've put together a really spiffy cover, but it may not be so spiffy. It may just scream it's self-published. And I think that if there is one thing, this is where you're going to make one of your investment dollars. You're going to get someone who this is what they do for a living and design a cover. And there are some wonderful cover designers where you can get some great covers for well under $1,000 out here. It's hard to believe you might have been taken. I believe that it's very important for people to speak better and get out there and understand the platform. And then lastly, what authors, you know, don't want to hear is you've got to work your butt off because here's what they think. Okay, I'm done with the book. I'm going to sell it to New York if that's the route we're going, and they're going to take care of everything. That's a wrong, wrong, wrong. What New York has become is basically a glorified printing press. Oh, they do a little cover design, and they may be doing some cursory editing, but they really expect you to come in with it edited already. They're going to come in and do things afterwards, but they expect you already to do a couple of these first runs, and if you get any money, they expect you to be the marketer. They're looking for authors who have a platform and know how to get out there in marketing. So that's why they pay attention to Facebook and Twitter and everything else. So that's that side of it. It's just getting ready to start prepping it, and you start putting it together on that. Now, when I look at books, I always think, and this works for fiction or nonfiction, but I always try to think, okay, what's the problem? What's the cause? What's the effect? And what's the solution? That's real easily understood for nonfiction. For the fiction author, what's the problem protagonist has? What got them into the deep doo-doo? What was the cause of it? How did it affect them or anybody else in their sphere? And how in the heck are they going to get out of this mess? It's the same kind of scenario. And you can start structuring your book that way to go through it, and you start creating it, and you go back to those three words, the snappy, sassy, salty. That snap is that get that attention. The sassy is there some attitude, a little attitude that might be fun in it. And the salty doesn't mean four-letter words that could be offensive, but it salty is when, for me, these are my definitions. Salty is when the reader goes, "Wait, what the hey did you say? Wait a minute, let me just kind of chew on this one a second," and you get their attention. And especially for the nonfiction writer, you really need to understand that process of it. So that's where we take it into there. Now, when we shift over and we start looking at some of the numbers of all of this, let's just go into the money and the traditional. And I'm gonna throw some numbers out. I know you don't have some of the slides that I play with when I do this. But when you have numbers that traditionally this is just basically the way it's been, you're going to see trade paper go anywhere from probably $9.95 up to it's in the $19.95, $20. I don't know. I hate all the 95s. I like even round numbers. It's easier to work with, and we've always priced our books at the 20, 25 type area. Hardback is, let's say it's 25. And if you look at the royalties today, I'm going to go in between and use a $15 mark for a trade paper, that royalties with a traditional publisher today with new contracts are usually paid on net. In the old days, it was paid on the gross retail amount. So if your book was $15, that the royalty would be paid on that amount. That has been changed. So if I use the average royalty range of 7 to 9%, on a $15 book, that means I'm going to make anywhere between 47 cents and 61 cents a book. If it's a hardback book, a $25, and again paid on the net, the formula has been, and this has been pretty traditional, that if you sell up to 5,000 copies, you get 10%, so that would be $1.13. Anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 copies, you'll get 12.5%, so that increases your take-home pay to $1.41. And anything over 10,000, they pay 15%, which in this case would be $1.69. If you have special sales there, you have to read your contract. A lot of times special sales will be split. Sometimes when you have movie rights, that will be split. Foreign rights, that will be split. So you need to just look at the fine print. Now, we used to say that the average book sold, nonfiction, average book sold was a roughly $5,000 books with a traditional publisher. That has plummeted. You are lucky to see 1,000 copies go out of the door with a lot of them. And that's why the self-publishing and the small press independent has so blossomed in this. And we have that. So let's say we did 5,000. We did average. You know what that means on trade paper? I would have made $3,050. And for hardback, I would have made $5,650. But let's say you did really well. You said 20,000. You're thinking, oh, this is good, 20,000. You would have made $12,000 with paper. And you would have made just shy of $30,000 with your hardback. And you're going to see less and less hardback books now from the stores. And I was in a meeting with the CEO of BNN just last week in Las Vegas, and 90% of hardbacks were turned back. So you're going to see bookstores really engaging in less and less of that, and publishers. All right, so let's say that you say, okay, I'm going to do this baby myself, so showing you about publishing. Let's talk about doing it yourself, publishing it yourself, but let's just say, you know what, I really need to sell it to bookstores. I really want to have my sales come through the bookstore route. And so you push it through that way. Well, what does it look like? And if we use just our 5,000 route number again, that if we sold 5,000 books and it was the trade, you've got cost. And this is what's important. This is where we bring in the dollars and cents. And in my book, Show Me About Book Publishing, there's a whole chapter that really details it. When I was talking to one of my co-authors on this, and I had written it up, and Rick said, oh, you know, this is such good information, but I don't think they're going to get it. And I said to him, if they don't get it, they're in trouble. They have got to get it. If you sold with a 55% discount, which is a really common, I'm seeing 60% discounts, to a wholesaler who in turn supplies to the bookstores and libraries, and you sold that 5,000 mark, your revenues would be $33,750. Now, everyone has budgets. What I personally budget, when I go into layout and edit, I budget $5,000 per book. I budget $1,000 for my cover copies. I could come in a little less. And for a 5,000 book run, I will probably, you're going to have, your costs will come down, you know, substantially in that arena. And it's going to cost you, for a paper, for a 5,000 book run, it's going to cost you less than, for a 250-page book roughly, it's going to cost you less than $1.50 a book. So let's say we have around $6,900 in printing-related costs. They've got to ship the things to you. So your total expenses are going to be just shy of $14,000, but you'll end up making $20,000 if you sell all those books. Now, if we remember, we compare that paper with the traditional model, that you're not going to make that much money. You would have made $3,000. So that might get your attention. Let's go to the hardback, and I'm going to give you an alternative to it, hardback, which you can get pretty much the same money. But if you do the 5,000, you still have the same layout and editing costs. That doesn't change. Your cover costs don't change. If you have a dust jacket, you may have a little bit more for cover cost, but I'm going to give you an alternative to that in just a sec. Your printing is going to be a little bit more, and it runs almost a dollar more per book, but you'll end up getting roughly $18,000, which will let you walk away with around $37,000. All right, so let's just say that could be door number two. And in this area, and then you come into, well, heck, if Judith said that she could sell 526 books in 5 hours and walk away with $16,000, how do I do that? And I will tell you, I had a very extensive speaking career that supported that. But I was going solo, and to me, offering books in bookstores was just a side thing. And I mean, it was a nuisance thing to do the shipping we did. They were there, people could order them, and that was fine. And when Amazon came along, they were always available there. But most of our sales came this route. So let's say, okay, I'm gonna build that platform. I'm gonna build that career. I'm gonna take it up that way, and I'm going to do paper. So we do that $15 paper. We have my costs, because we always know the costs are the costs, and they were roughly $13,700. But when I sell 5,000 books at $15, I'm talking about walking away with a little bit over $61,000. That's way up from $3,000, and certainly up from the $20,000 if I'd gone through the bookstore route. And if I did the hardback at the $25 version, I would be looking at roughly $106,000 increase. So when I do the comparison of summing up, and you're thinking, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to sell 5,000. All right, let me do a summing up with kind of, let's say 3,000. That you, if you do the traditional route, you're going to make less than five. You will make roughly $1,800 with a paper. With you sell it through distributors, wholesalers, you're going to make roughly $8,600. And if you do it on your own, roughly $33,000. If you sold hardback variations, you'll make roughly $3,400 with a traditional, just under $20,000 with a wholesaler, and over $60,000 with a solo. So I've mentioned a couple of times, how do you get close to a hardback cost? One of the things that we do is our publishing, and my publishing company is Mile High Press, that one of the things that we do, and with a lot of the clients that I work with when I am in my book shepherd cap, is that we will often do a paper book, but we will put flaps on it. And the flaps, depending upon how many you're printing, and we're not talking about doing a run of 50 books or 100 books, we're talking more. That if it's 1,000, we usually come in looking minimum of 1,000, and we usually don't go over 3,000 because you can get back to print so quickly if need be. But if you put a flap on it, that cost is going to be anywhere from 25 to say 50 cents in that arena per book. We have found that the perception of a book with flaps, which basically gives it not only a bookmark but a dust jacket entity where it has a fold over with it, is that what it will do is have a higher quality, higher perception, belief that the book will cost more, and they come away with really that they don't mind paying close to what maybe the hardback. So we've never had a problem putting our books out at that $25 mark and bringing it in. Our return on investment comes in and it measures that out. What's important here for everyone is really to understand what's your break-even, what you're willing to commit in your time and investment. And when you're looking at your cost of your title, and you figure out, because one of the things that I think is very important is to understand, well, how many books do you need to sell to get all your money back? I think that's a critical thing to understand. So what's the cost of your cover design? What's the cost of editing? What's the cost of layout? What's the cost of printing? What about shipping those books back to your home base or to a wholesale or a warehouse? What about any consultants you've brought into the party? What, any other costs that you have going on? What's that total cost of publishing? We are not talking about marketing related. We're talking about producing the book that you take out and move with. And when you come up with that total cost, you divide it by the number of books that you're printing, and then you get that cost per unit. How many books do you need to sell to recover? And that's what I try to do from the get-go, to shoot for that, so I will come in with some kind of a pre-sale to put the book together, that if I need to sell 400 copies, which is often the case, yes, it seems to be an average. I need to pre-sell 400 copies of a book that I know that I will recoup all my money and get it back. Then it's gravy, and you take it from there. So with that, let's jump into this thing called the author's platform and the book platform. If you don't see people talk about book platform, they always talk about the author platform. To me, they go together, and I'm going to give you some real numbers of what I went through with one of my books. And I've written in the financial arena. I write nonfiction. I don't have the gift that many of you have, that you can write the fiction. But I love it. I read it. And remember, people buy books for a couple of reasons. One, they want a problem solved. They want their pain taken away, or they want to be entertained. That's what they're looking for. So when you're creating your platform, you've got to have the vision. That is a key component. I've mentioned this earlier. What's your vision? What do you see your book looking like? What do you see this thing growing to and evolving to? What's your passion? You know, what brings you to the party? And the one I'm going to tell you about as I get into the real platform, I thought it was going to be the financial field. I thought that was my passion, and it turned out to be sabotage in the workplace. But the passion, what brought you to the party? You know, for me, I worked in the financial field on that first run, so I was writing financial books. But I was ahead of my time for writing books for women. And at that time, I was with a brokerage house called E.F. Hutton, and which is no longer in existence, and that I had approached management saying, hey, I don't want to be a stockbroker anymore. I want to do these other things. I'm teaching these courses. I have these ideas. I have this vision. And they said, there is no room for that kind of vision with us. And basically, I could have been a Susie Orman back at that time.
Yeah.
But that was the very, you know, we're going back to the early 70s. All right, we're going way back in that 70 period. And when I left Hutton in 77 and started my own firm. But that's what happens, you know, sometimes. And I know that some of our listeners are ahead of themselves. But what was the passion? I really wanted to help women with money. My master's thesis was on it. I watched my heart mom go through a wrenching divorce, and I saw everybody take advantage of her. And I just said, that can't keep happening. And then the other component of your platform now comes in the people. Who are your fans? Who loves you? And this is where the internet comes in and helps you. This is where your visibility within your community or what you've done. And I think that today, for today's author, it's not all internet publicity. You need to, you know, you need some of those tie-ins locally with the media so that you can come and you can pitch and do things too. So when I started, my first book came out in June of 1981. I was a financial planner. I had 3 printings within 3 weeks. I landed on Good Morning America. I had a wonderful spread in Savvy Magazine. I was asked to speak all over for a women's group, and it was called The Woman's Guide to Financial Savvy. All right, what happened that year is I went through an embezzlement, and I had a partner, a woman partner, steal over $1 million from a loan I had guaranteed. By the time it was over, I lost in excess of $1 million. and I lost my health, I lost my home. I mean, my God, I had three teenagers, and we lived in a garage. You know what it's like to live in a garage with three teenagers for 6 months? Do not try it. But as you start putting your life back together, oh, it was awful. Wow. Susan, it was awful. We put it, but it was the embezzlement. And during that time, one of the things I did is I used to have lots of investors, and I would put together deals, and we had a whole series of little small 17 to 20 room European type hotels. And my partner took on a partner I knew nothing about. It was called Cocaine. And all this money disappeared. Mm-hmm. So the bank thought, you know, why don't you just write a check and cover it all, and we'll all go our merry ways. And my response to them was, well, I certainly knew how to write a $500,000 check, but let me tell you how high it will bounce.
Yeah, right.
And I stepped in to learn how to run it. I knew nothing about running hotels. I went back to school, worked on my doctorate, and the dissertation was on ethics, and specifically, do women undermine other women? From that, a new book came out, and it was called, and this is where I was rejected by every major publisher. Now, one of the key figures at Warner Books said, this book can be hot. This book could be really big. She said, you should be getting at least, and this is back in 1986, you should be getting at least $100,000 advance. That was a hefty advance back then. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't sell it. Because what I didn't realize is that I was holding a mirror up in front of these editors. They were all women, and they were all backstabbing each other. See, I didn't get it. I didn't get it.
Wow.
So I had this dissertation. It was on ethics, and my platform started. And I went with a very small press. They came off with a god-awful cover using the colors blue and red, which are not my colors. If anyone knows me, I'm a purple girl. and they had these two gippy goo women on the cover with white jackets. It was like the dental hygienist and the receptionist.
Ew.
One had Farrah Fawcett hair. Gippy goo.
Yeah.
And then I got them to take the babes off when we went to reprint it. And we went to 8 printings on this silly book. And so then it just went plain, which was better than the other. And then, you know, I'm out busy, and I got a cover story out on People magazine. I learned how to pitch that. When people said, how'd you get on Oprah? I pitched it. I learned how to pitch. How did you get on this? I pitched it. You learn how to do this stuff yourself. And when you create the hook, and my hook for woman to woman was, contrary to popular belief, men don't discriminate. They will shaft anybody. Women do. And then we got into it, and it was just hot, hot, hot. Now, when Monica Lewinsky and Ms. Linda Tripp came along, it was like, thank you, God. And we went back and we redid it and came out with Woman to Woman 2000 on with that. Now, from that, from the embezzlement I went into, from the huge financial losses I went to, I all of a sudden developed a corporate spokesperson areas because they're looking for women. And women were coming into our own late 80s, early 90s, and self-esteem and confidence. And Bristol-Myers was looking for a spokesperson. I ended up having a 3-year relationship with them. And out of that, they underwrote the entire study for the first book called The Confidence Factor, How Self-Esteem Can Change Your Life. And I spoke all over the country. I did tons of media for them, and that contract was worth close to $250,000. From that, it bred another book called Gender Traps, and then out of Gender Traps, that was a McGraw-Hill book, and that was not a wonderful, warm, fuzzy relationship. In fact, when I took back my rights, those stinkers sold foreign rights after the book was taken back, and I never got a penny.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's a wow. And but when I did the study for Gender Traps, there was always one of the points that came out, and I said, that's another book all by itself. And it was just a question, and I did heavy research for all my books. And out of that, I had a question, one question for that book was, what are the 3 biggest obstacles and problems you're encountering in your workplace? And I got over 5,000 responses, 5,000 responses. And in the top 10, number 9 was undermining myself. stabbing myself in the back. And I knew that that was a standalone, separate book. And that came out, Stop Stabbing Yourself in the Back. And then I was speaking in Upper State New York, and several directors of nurses heard me speak about sabotage in the workplace and confidence. And they said, you need to do a study on us. Now, I have to tell you, I was tired of doing stinking studies. And I said, I don't think I want to do any more studies. And there were a lot of people in healthcare in my last study. And they said, no, you need to do one exclusively. Well, they persisted, and I caved, and I was shell-shocked with the results, because in the book that came out called The Browse Report on Women in Healthcare, that, and this is the spin-off from the Woman to Woman 2000, from that book, we learned that if you worked in the healthcare environment, there was a 42% higher probability of being undermined by a coworker. All right, that created, this is now where I'm talking about becoming the whale in the lake. When that book went out there, I became the go-to person. If you got conflict or toxicity going on in your workplace, you need to get Briles in. And then another book came out called Zapping Conflict Within the Healthcare Workplace. And then the last book in that series, which was 209, and basically I've stopped writing in that area, was called Stabotage, How to Deal with the Pit Bulls, Skunks, Snakes, Scorpions, and Slugs in the Healthcare Workplace. Any person who works in healthcare and sees that knows exactly what it's about. So that funneling down, that narrowing down, that niching down, I became really the big person. You've got a women, female-dominated workplace. You've got this group. This is who you want to get in. So what I did during this period is I spoke, I created postcards that I sent out to groups, you know, speaking platform. I sent postcards out anytime. Let's say Atlanta, Georgia booked me. I would send out to every contact we had, every hospital we knew in Atlanta, Georgia, saying, hey, I'm going to be in town. You can get a discount by adding me on a day after, a day before, day after type thing. We created special tools. You know how people give away bookmarks. It's a common thing. Oh, everyone needs a bookmark. Give it away. Well, why give it away? We sold them. We made them a tool. We had a very special tool we created called the Carefronting Script. We put that on one side, specifically how to do it. We put a very fancy, dancy purple tassel on it. We sold it for $5. What was my cost? 23 cents. We put purple ribbon around 10 of them during Nurses Week, sold them for a discount, $4 for 10. We sold thousands of them. So you think those tools, to add to it, we contacted very specifically drilling down state national nursing associations, and I'm not a nurse, but boy, I knew their jargon. I knew their lingo. We did a variety of things. And it was always about who do you know. We created two shirts that said, I'm a nurse of confidence, you know, that beware type thing. We had fancy dancy buttons we fixed up. We created five pack with five of my key books, which was a confidence factor in Zapping Conflict and Sabotage. And I still wrote in the money area, Money Smarts for Turbulent Times and Stop Stabbing, and they saved $25. They got the fancy dancy bookmark when they bought the five pack, but we sold that for $120. So what we found out in the creation of that platform, what worked was really learning about the publishing business. We learned that it was okay to divorce a publisher and an agent. We learned how to create our own publishing house. We learned all about niche speaking and publishing. We understood, and we really implemented pre-selling books. I would start gathering orders 6 months out before a book. Sometimes I haven't even written a word, knowing that it was coming, which forced me to get there. And I would never say, we're going to ship your book on September 1st. What we would say is, your book will be shipped in fall of 2010. So you give you 3 month window. Help yourself out here.
Yeah.
We learned that storytelling was critical. We learned about the art of self publicity, and that sometimes being a corporate spokesperson or a product publicity person really could work. What didn't work for me was I thought when Woman to Woman came out that I would be really hot in the corporate speaking market, which pays a lot more, and I was so wrong. I was scared to death of me. Scared to stinking death of me. Because that they viewed what I was talking about, which was a form of gender harassment, would be interpreted as sexism. and they didn't want to go down that path, although they had, you know, sexual harassment programs all over the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So it was what you call the wrong fit. I learned that speaking bureaus weren't the fit for me. That do we get booked by a speaking bureau? Maybe one or two a year, but I didn't drill down. I learned that bookstores were important, and the signings, and you know, most of our listeners need to understand the typical signing is 6 books get sold. That's why you have to get you make it a party. You invite it, you would invent, you do a talk, you do all of it, because I think book signings need to have at least 40 books sold, preferably 100 in those areas. And I learned one of the things, it's very critical to say no. So let me walk everyone through what that drilling down and focusing did for me. From 1987 to 1994, when Woman to Woman came out and the first edition of the Browse Report on Women in Healthcare came out, the first confidence factor was out, I made a total of those 7 years, $700,000 in speaking fees. As a spokesperson, I made another $250,000. Book sales and royalties and gigs came into another $385,000. So I came in with close to $1.3 million right then, during that time. From the years 1995 to 1999, when Monica Lewinsky came along, and again, we had the Browse Report on Women in Healthcare was carrying it, and I still had the confidence. I've never let go of the confidence factor. We've done revisions of those. My royalties from New York were $47,000. My lost New York royalties were $84,000. My direct book sales at gigs was $313,000. My speaking fees were $655,000, and being a spokesperson was $69,000 for just about $1.1 million. And then in 2000, when I created Mile High Press, royalties from New York are plummeting because I'm not playing in their field anymore, and that was just a little bit over $9,000. My direct book sales during those 10 years at gigs, speaking gigs, was just below $630,000. And my speaking fees were over $1.3 million, and I picked up another $45,000 as a spokesperson that brought that in close to $2 million. So during that full time, from that first book that started in 1987 that really started me down my passion path of women undermining women and how to recognize it, how to stop it, how to deal with it, and understanding where my financial side came into play, that I could really crunch the numbers and figure out what the productivity cost loss were, plus what those turnover replacement, because you had this bad apple that was causing all this trouble. I could go in and say, why are you keeping this person, for God's sakes? But I was able to create over $4.3 million. So that's the author's platform. You have the vision, you got to have the passion, you got to have the people, and you've got to work your butt off. So you have to really decide as we come up with our hour here, you know, which door are you going to go? Is it going to be door number one? Are you going to do the traditional? Are you going to do self-publishing? And please, please do not get involved with anything that looks like, smells like, talks like, walks like a vanity press. Or are you going to go your own route and create a small press and an independent press? The words I want to leave our listeners with is, it's so important. This is one of my keepers that comes from my book, The Confidence Factor. Don't do well what you have no business doing. Really understand what you're good at, and that's what you focus on. You outsource the other stuff that you aren't, whether you have to barter it or you pay for it. But don't get immersed and mucked up in an area that is going to bring you down, because it's just the wrong fit. So with that, that kind of wraps up some of the things in publishing. There is so much to do. I thought it would be important just to really go through some of the nuances. Is number one, Susan, I wanted our listeners to realize that, you know what, you can make a living doing this. You can, you can make a comfortable living. You can support a family, and you can put them through school. And sometimes yourself through school. So you can do that, but it's all about being focused, having that vision, the passion, the commitment, the time you put into it, the energy. And the other keeper I want to tell y'all is that if you never say no, your yeses are worthless. That you in that focusing and funneling, you're going to have to really look closely who is in your environment, who is in your circle. Are they fire hosers or are they cheerleaders? because you need those to create those paths and go down them.
Well, that's kind of a good note to close out on, since I mean, that was sort of an amazing amount of information. I've got much to think about, but myself. So, and I'd like to thank you for sharing. I mean, particularly your story is just fascinating because, I mean, it's like you have lived through the publishing industry from going back. And having all these different experiences, it's really interesting, and I really appreciate you sharing it with us.
Well, you're welcome. I think that the fact that I have done the traditional side and multiple times, and some went with a wonderful thing,
mm-hmm.
and some not so wonderful, and then going through creating your own and doing it, you know, on truly a shoestring and not knowing what in the devil I was doing, to really learning how to do it. I think that I've always said that my successes, who I am is not from the successes, it's from the failures. And
I think that's true for a lot of people, actually.
Yes, exactly.
You know? Yeah.
So, I would encourage people, I know they certainly, they're members of you, to certainly go over and sign up for the Author You newsletter. It's a freebie, and it's not a newsletter, it's actually a book publishing magazine, and I think this month's is 35 pages,
yeah.
And really heavily intent, and do follow us on Author You on Facebook, do a like, and follow us there, and really, you know, check out what we're doing. So we have the authoryou.org website, and U is in the letter U, and the bookshepherd.com website, and there's articles on both of those that are free to anyone who drops in.
And you have you have another website, which is briles.com, right?
Yeah, and that's my thinking. I think what's important for authors, I mean, we didn't get into, you know, the whole strategy, so maybe we do that in another call sometime, Susan, but
mm-hmm.
that the browse.com is strictly for speaking. That was,
oh, okay.
And that when we go through that, I just got through doing a whole one-day workshop on how to launch your book on the Internet and creating a book blog tour. And you need their specific websites, and so I've got a specific website that was for browse.com, which was my speaking when I was out there doing that in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the only speaking I really want to do ties in with publishing, and if anyone finds me from the old days, they have to work really hard to find me because I am not marketing. I don't market to them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Book Shepherd is my consulting side where we work with people on projects of their books, and then the Author You is the membership site where we create, you know, we have monthly meetings, and we have our May extravaganza, which is a two-day event, and where we bring in national speakers, and we do those kind of things. This year's theme is going to be called It Takes a Village to Create a Book.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do those things. And then when we launched Show Me About Book Publishing, and I would encourage all our listeners to get that, and Amazon, you can Kindle it or Nook it or iPad it or P-book it, that you get that as a really good guide to help with you, and it's very friendly and easy, and stories, and we do tell you some of the hiccups along the way. And John Kramer and Rick Frischman and I are starting to create a series on the Show Me About. So book publishing was the first one, and I wrote that one.
Cool.
Rick's next on the next one, but each one's different. So Show Me About had its own separate website because we needed to use it for the Internet,
mm-hmm.
type of thing.
When
sense. You do those launches, you have to have your own website. Don't send them back to your regular website. It just confuses the issue.
Exactly. I know. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. I think I have 25 websites or something. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But people don't realize that that's a huge part of it. So that's really important. But yeah, I wanted to point out that, I mean, you really do have a number of different things going on online here. And when you have multiple books like you do or I do, I mean, that kind of ends up becoming part of your world, and that's part of the working your butt off that you mentioned.
Exactly.
Is just, you know, dealing with that whole marketing arm, which is huge.
And there's just no choice. You jump in. In this month's column, I write on open it up with Steve Jobs because he talked about how you have to, you know, you have to be willing to be foolish. At times, you've got to do that jump in at times and be willing to make mistakes And that's what it's about. You are going to make mistakes. No one is going to have it perfect. And I think that's important to understand. We sure would like to. But when you're a member of Spawn, when you're a member of AuthorU, but the thing is that we are going to shorten their learning curve so quickly, and they will make less mistakes, which means less money gets kissed off.
Exactly. And that too is also a big thing. I mean, and you see it every day. I see it every day. The people who have already, like you said, been burned by the vanity press and then are discouraged and dismayed. And I mean, it's just, it happens every single day. And so, doing things like reading, I mean, I always, and I think Dan Pointer has said this too, but, you know, if you spent $100 on books on publishing, you know, traditional publishing or self-publishing or anything, just learning something about the business, then you can save yourself, you know, potentially thousands upon thousands of dollars and a whole lot of aggravation, pain, and heartache, because books are such a personal thing. And so it feels horrible to lose a lot of money on something that you've put so much work into. So it's like, that's the thing. It's spending that money on a book. If you're producing a book, you shouldn't have problems buying a book, you know what I mean?
Well, and that's one of the questions you have to decide, you know, going through. I mean, is 10 books too much? I mean, when you look at that very small press, that vanity press, you know how many they sell? 10. 10
yeah.
books. And then you really have to think, all this you put into it, are you really sure? So now that we have to go back to, what's your vision? What's your passion? What are you willing to put in your time and your energy and your money to commit to birth this baby?
And that's really something that I've thought about a lot, and part of why I've gravitated towards, you and I talked about this before the call, but why I've gravitated towards the pet rescue vision and what pet rescue world is, because these people have a lot of problems, and I understand them. And it's kind of like what you were talking about, a lot of the things that you were talking about of the women and backstabbing. Most people who are involved in the humane world are women, and so a lot of what you were talking about, I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is really interesting, and definitely resonates with my audience too. So it's like, oh my gosh, maybe I should go look at these books, and because it could help them too. I mean, it's really interesting, because same type of thing. Healthcare caregivers, in this case, they're animal caregivers. There's a lot of parallels.
Exactly.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yes. So for that book, just to advise you, I wouldn't go to the woman-to-woman book. I would go to the Sabotage book, because it's the latest,
yeah.
It's the current, it's got the great scripting in it. Forget that there's stories about doctors and nurses. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
You're in for the hardcore material. And some of the stories are pretty shocking, but you're in for the hardcore of what can I take away from the communication on how to constructively confront somebody and nail them, and understand these different personalities and how they're going to respond.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go look that up. Maybe I'll have you speak for my rescue organization. I know you're not speaking on that anymore, but you probably have a lot to...
I speak well on that. I do a great job. I just, you know, you have to come to me. I'm not going to say, hey, I'm in your area.
Oh, no, it's a teleseminar.
I'd be glad to do that.
Yeah. Anyway, I will look for your book, and I know we're out of time, so thank you all for being here, and again, please go visit the Book Shepherd website at thebookshepherd.com, and I know we're out of time, so thanks for staying a couple extra minutes here. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.